As many of you know, last night we performed the oratorio, which is the music that you'll be hearing later until Christmas time. The oratorio, an oratorio, is a musical expression of the life of Christ, and Swami Kriyananda wrote this oratorio, I think Karen said, in 1986. He went on a pilgrimage to Israel. He'd visited it only once before for a brief period of time, and then this he spent a longer period of time there. And in the holy sites there, he felt such deep inspiration. He felt in direct communion with the presence and the power of Christ in a superconscious way. And afterwards, almost to his own surprise, when he returned to Italy, where he was living, or at least staying at that time, one morning he woke up and he felt the communion he'd felt with Christ and the inspiration he'd felt with Christ. He felt it translating into melodies, as sort of a way to put it, because the melodies were not the inspiration, but the inspirations found expression in melody. In his book, The Revelations of Christ, which has just been published in America and now also in India, he explains that a revelation is a direct experience. And then afterwards, the one who receives the revelation may try to find a way to communicate that with others, because it's a unique moment of communion with the infinite. And the words or whatever, or the painting or the image, whatever you put on it, is just an attempt to say it. So his inspiration found expression in melody. And in his way of writing music, music comes to him very quickly. I believe what he did was he had a small tape recorder and he either whistled or hummed the melodies into the tape recorder so that he would be able to remember them. He hears them, really. He doesn't work them out. And then he came back to San Francisco after that trip. He was living in America then. And he was so thrilled with what he had felt. Let me go back to what I was going to say. He said later, it was very interesting, and he writes about this. I write about this, I believe, in the book I wrote about Swami Kriyananda. Swami Kriyananda, as we have known him, there's a chapter in there called Creativity, I think. And it's a lot of examples of how his extraordinary creativity works. And he talked about the fact that a man who was writing songs, and his desire to be a songwriter was distracting him from his dedication to the spiritual path, to living in the spiritual community, and he wanted permission from Swamiji to leave the spiritual community so he could go out and work on his musical career. And he tried to explain to Swamiji why he should do that, because he said, you're an artist, he said to Swamiji. You understand how it is. Sometimes you simply have to express yourself. And partly as an example to that man, but also as a true answer, Swami said, I never feel a compelling need to express myself, he said like that. He said, I am a disciple. He said, I have a desire to serve my guru. And I have a deep desire to serve in whatever way I can, and if by doing creative work I can serve him, that's my desire. And when he talked about the oratorio specifically, he said, the inspiration I received in Israel, in the land, in the walking the ground where Jesus walked, he said, was complete in itself. It didn't require any further expression to be complete. He said the desire to express it was the inner impulse implanted in him by a master because of the service he could render by translating that revelation into something that would communicate. And the medium of music, of course, he's since written it in many words, including the Revelations book, but the medium of music was the ideal form, because all of us are composed of sound vibrations. This is the metaphysical explanation from those who have perceived this of our true nature. This is the Om vibration. That's why every religious tradition has a sound like Om. It's either Om, Amen, Amin, But what it is, again, it's an attempt by great masters who see the truth to then translate it into something that those who haven't had that revelation will put them on the wavelength, and if they go deep enough into it, then they will feel it. Paramahansa Yogananda, master, teaches us a whole technique of meditation, which is simply just communicating, just communing with the Om sound. Because if we communicate with the Om, what happens is that wonderful passage that Patrick read, the intruder masquerading as the divine, which is what we normally call ourselves, will be driven out by that vibration. So Swamiji felt that the tones of music, which because of the origin of those tones, because they were very close to the Om, and so you just, when the music is very spiritual, it moves only slightly out from the Om. The difficulty of so much of what passes for music nowadays, you can't really dignify it with that word, but it's way out there, and it's so absolutely dedicated to affirming sensuality and physical pleasure and egoic force that it's moved way, way out from the Om. And that's what makes it deleterious in its effect on us, is because instead of liberating us from this masked intruder, which is our limited ego self, it affirms it with all this force. And music is especially, I want to use the word dangerous, spiritually speaking, because it is our very substance. As Swamiji says, it's a direct experience. That's why all different parts of the brain are involved. Words it's a step removed. I speak the words to you, and there is a certain vibration to words, it's true, but there's this intellectual component where you have to understand what's being said. When Swami Kriyananda speaks, it's very interesting. Oftentimes, you'll listen to him speak, and you'll think, this is such a brilliant talk. And afterwards, you can hardly remember a word of what he said, because his consciousness is coming out, and I sort of watching him once, what I saw was he was just delivering vibrations, and then he was putting the words on the vibrations he was delivering. So one would receive vibrations and have this great sense of wisdom, literally, because that Om vibration contains all the attributes of spirit, which includes wisdom. And yet when one would try to then put it into intellectual terms, in a very real sense, it had bypassed that. That's why listening to Master's voice, or the voice of any great sage, there's a tape of Master chanting Om, and just Om, Om, and then he says, and then he intermittently, I say, it was just one prayer that we've made into a loop tape. Om, the Infinite Mother, Om, the Cosmic Vibration, Om, the Infinite Spirit, Om, like this. And you just listen to that over and over and over again, and the sheer repetition of it has this tremendous life-changing power. So coming back to wherever I was, this idea of Swamiji and this oratorio, and it coming to him in this way. Last night when we were performing it, I had an extremely simple duty, which was all the choir goes and we very neatly line up. And because I was on the end, you know, I was supposed to, when I could see everyone was ready, I was just supposed to signal for them to sit down. And they started the music, and I just walked right over and sat down, shut my eyes. You know, I was vaguely aware. And fortunately, there are other wiser heads than mine. It just, you know, such a simple task. But in the moment, it was like that vibration just of those tones coming out completely shift us, this wonderful giving energy. Well, this whole scripture, I was just so grateful, you know, to all the masters and all the givingness that the spirit has, where it's always trying to help us in one form or another to uplift. In the scripture reading today about these poor virgins, whom I always feel so sorry for them, you have these 10 virgins, and they all think they're doing the right thing, and then 5 of them just get left out in the cold. You know, it's such a tragic story. It really, You know, they're all working so hard, and then the bridegroom comes, and the five of them are frantically running all over trying to make up what they didn't have, and the bridegroom just slams the door in their face. You know, God is not always nice. There's just this simple metaphysical reality to the truth of vibrations. In the astral world, this world that we live in is mixed vibrations. There's very uplifted souls, and there's very dark souls, and we all share the same space. We can all be standing on the sidewalk together. Sometimes the good, if it's stronger than the dark, will lift it, and sometimes the dark, if it's stronger than the good, will pull it down and do not very nice things. In the astral world, it's homogeneous vibrations. You live among those who are on the same wavelength as you. And higher souls can descend to help lower souls, but lower souls cannot rise up. I say lower in awareness. All souls are equal in God, but just ignorant of where their happiness lies. But they can't come up and invade the more elevated spaces. That's why there's much less motivation in the astral world to grow. There's a lot of motivation here because we suffer. We see suffering or we suffer ourselves. So this parable, though, that Jesus told, which is such a beautiful story, really, he's really trying to direct, as he always did, people's attention not into the outward forms of things. Now, bear in mind, this was his particular mission, because the people, the Jewish people at that time, who were the devotional power that drew him, the truth of Judaism had become quite distorted by this very, very form-oriented concept of religion. All these rituals, you know, the Pharisees say to Jesus, your disciples no longer follow the ritual washing. They don't wash their hands in the proper ritualistic way before eating. I mean, that was indicative of how absolutely precise they had taken God's teaching to be. And Jesus answered him, what makes a man unclean is not whether or not he washes his hands, not what goes into his mouth, but what comes out of it. In other words, what his consciousness is. So Jesus was trying to help people to understand it's really who you are in the deepest part of yourself. It's really what you are maintaining, whether or not there is fuel for the true fire of divine light. It's not sufficient even to go through proper rituals. It's not sufficient to come to church and even to sit down and do your meditations or your energization exercises or your prayers or whatever it is that you do, unless there is also fuel, and that fuel is the power of the divine light, the power of love expressed, the power of love used, whether it's used inwardly in devotional meditation, and not just meditation, I'm doing this because I'm supposed to, or I'm doing this because I'm going to get to heaven, or I'm doing this because this makes me look good to do this, but doing it just for the sheer love of doing it, especially out of gratitude for all the divine gifts that have been given to us. One of the really moving aspects of this week for many of us, when we've been very focused on Swamiji, has been the simple thought, all of Ananda, I mean, some of you have walked in here for the first time, everything that is this spiritual path expressed through this master's in this particular way is the result of this one man's absolute dedicated effort for 60 years to fulfill what his guru asked him to do. His guru said, you know, spread my message to the world. And so he has. He was 36 years old. He was penniless. He'd been ostracized from all his friends. He was absolutely solitary. But by the simple, determined, patient application of willpower, in attunement with the divine, he's created something that touches the lives of millions of people. He's written 80 books. His books are in 30 languages. They're in 100 countries. Everywhere in the world, somebody is picking up some little volume in Japanese or Polish or Norwegian or Chinese, in 30 languages, and just reading some simple truth. Now, the one thing, as I was starting to say, that happened this week is that we all had a tangible way of giving back, which is just by praying. And so many of us discovered by giving back directly that this great wave of bliss was coming to us, because that's the real secret of life. That's the oil that the virgins, the true virgins, have in their lamp, which is the oil of selfless love. That's the nature of God. We want to be in tune with God. We want to have an experience of God. What is the nature of God? God is love. God is giving. Everything of manifested creation, even the opportunity to have uplifted consciousness, that's a divine gift. And how do we expand that? We expand that by becoming a clear window. Swamiji writes in his letter, it was so subtle. He said, when I had the heart operation, I affirmed the bliss. In this operation, he said, I discovered the bliss. He said, I wasn't imposing it. It just came out of me. Last night, before the choir went in to sing the oratorio, this thought came to me, which I shared with them. In the Festival of Light, which you all will hear later, we speak, and there's this little part. The great master Jesus appeared to the great master Babaji and asked Babaji, because Jesus continues to have responsibility, spiritual responsibility for the West. He said, in the West, they remember me, but they have become a little confused about my teaching. It no longer contains this kernel of deep inner communion with God. So Jesus speaks to Babaji and he says, let's do something about this. And so Babaji starts in motion the descent of these avatars, which ended in Paramahansa Yogananda coming to America. And it was all a direct response to Jesus saying, help me. Help me re-inspire those who are devoted to me. And then Master Swamiji felt this great calling to become Master's disciple. And Master said to Swamiji, help me carry out this divine commission that the great masters have given me. And then Swamiji comes and he turns to us and he says, help me do this. And that's not a selfish request. That's saying, come, you know, share my feast of joy. Enter into this reality. And so last night, Swamiji goes to Israel. He feels Christ's consciousness, the consciousness of Jesus. Jesus gives him the melodies that express that. Swami comes back with this great enthusiasm and he teaches it to all of us and people take it as their own. And then all these years later, we're all coming together and we're rehearsing it. And then we get to stand up as you've seen people stand up and we get to give these melodies out to the world. And make no mistake of it, it's not just the handful of people who sing or who hear it. You know, this whole world is vibration, and you plant in the ether these vibrations of the spirit, and a long time later, you don't even know where or how, somebody walks into a bookstore and they see Autobiography of a Yogi, or they see Revelations of Christ. Something comes into their mind. Gee, that book looks interesting. Haven't all of you, I mean, at some point or another, every one of you who's sitting in here, something made you come, didn't it? And what made you come to a greater understanding of life was somebody somewhere responded to some call of the divine that said, help me. There's a beautiful Catholic hymn. I can't sing it because I don't know it, but we sang it when our school children did the play, a play about Moses. And it's a sort of like a two-part, I wish Helen were here because she was a great Catholic person. She's the one who sang it. But God's voice says, I have this great need. I hear the call of my anguished children. They need help. Who shall I send? And then the chorus is, send me, Lord. Please, Lord, send me. Now, it's not spiritually fruitful to stand around and talk about our mission and what we are doing and how great this is. It's just, that's the intruder in his masquerade trying to take us away from our truth. So don't even imagine for a moment that I'm speaking on that level. I'm speaking on the exact opposite side of it. One Sunday morning, we came here and I found out something which I didn't even know was true. That one devotee had taken it upon himself every Sunday morning to just walk around and just pick up the little bits of trash that were around the church. I don't think I've ever seen anything that touched me quite as much as that. Just by himself, he would just walk around, and I'm not going to say the name. He just would walk around, just pick up the trash. You know, people would walk by. It's not as if all of us were born to do great things that will be written on the pages of history. I told you, mentioned to you about the book about Swamiji that I wrote. The last two stories I wrote, in many ways, were two of the most touching. And one of them was from this woman named Nalini. And she said herself, this is how she described it. She said, my life will not be... She described how patiently Swamiji had stayed with her for 30 years. And just as she put it, constantly telling me the same things over and over again, each time as if it were for the first time, never being impatient with the slowness of her learning, and how gradually, as she put it, by water dripping on a stone, you know, he carved away the ego and left a place for the divine. And then she said, my life will not be written large on the pages of history. She says, it's been a humble life. But in Master's poem, Samadhi, Cosmic Consciousness, he says, the sparrow, speaking from the divine perspective, the sparrow, each grain of sand, falls not without my sight. In other words, even the tiniest element, as Swami puts it, infinity, omniscience implies both the infinite and the infinitesimal. So she says, I have been that little sparrow, and as many times as I have fallen through the instrument of Swamiji's unconditional love for me, I have been caught and lifted up again. Now, it's wonderful to say how profound it is that the great ones have done this. But the great ones are individual. And what they are saying to us is, very simply, will you help? Because how else will it continue? And we invite you to help in whatever ways your spirit inspires you. Of course, you can help through here. But the main thing, above all, is that spirit of giving. Many of us found that the most profound meditations virtually we've had in our whole life were meditating for Swamiji. And Swamiji went so far as to say he felt it was a watershed moment in Ananda's history, because we, who think so much about what we receive from him, suddenly rose to the dignity of understanding also what we can give. You see, there's so much in that. So many people say, I have nothing to give. I'm so small. I don't know these teachings. Who am I? But you see, that's the intruder masquerading as the infinite. There is always someone standing behind us who can use at least a little of what we have to give. Just a kind word, a nice smile. I used to work in a department store, you know, 40 years ago. And just having one person come in, one customer come in, and see me as a living person standing behind that counter would change my whole day. Isn't that amazing? Think about that. You know, just one moment of genuine acknowledgement of the divine in one another changes the whole course of history, including our own. You know, that's how the Christ consciousness can find us. It's not that the Christ consciousness isn't present. It's that we are not vibrating on his wavelength. And it's really, in truth, we ourselves who shut the door. This is Christmas. This is the birth of the Christ consciousness. And if we want to receive that birth, then let us be then as Jesus was. Will you help me? That's what the masters ask. Let us in our whole heart say, yes, Lord, send me.